Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is The Promise of Tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And so good you joined us once again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation, all the good stuff right here on The Promise of Tomorrow. In the first half hour, well, you probably heard that story out of Iran that they're worried about that worm that's infecting all their computers, and I didn't understand the story a whole lot, so we got Thomas Vagone to come aboard. He's with the Homeland Security Office in Washington, D.C. He's going to explain a little bit for us. And Karen Krause from Raytheon is with us today. She's instrumental in formulating the Homeland Security Conference that's going on there in another couple of weeks. We're going to talk to them. In the second half hour, our old friend Dashuan Feng is going to stop by. He's Senior Executive Vice President of National Cheng Kung University in Taiwan. Always has provocative things to say. And so it's going to be a real treat to have him back with us, too. And we'll visit the Den of Strangers. Today we're going to get some wisdom from Andy Rooney. That's right. We're going to visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half of the program. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. If you were listening to our last program, you heard Dennis Treese at the Massachusetts Port Authority talking about airport security. And we touched on the subject of full body scanners and the pushback that he had gotten from these body scanners, essentially strip searching us as we go through to board the airplanes. Well, a listener wrote in a suggestion about airport security devices that eliminates the privacy concerns that come with full body scanners at the airports. This listener is suggesting a booth that you can step into that will not X-ray you, but will detonate any explosive device you may have on you. And he sees this as a win-win for everybody, with dissent about racial profiling or anything, and it would also eliminate the cost of a long and expensive trial. Justice would be swift, he says. Case closed. Well, I can see it now. We're in the airport terminal. We hear a muffled explosion, and shortly thereafter, an announcement comes over the PA system. Attention, standby passengers. We now have a seat available on the next flight. Well, let's get off of this and let's step into our very busy newsroom and see what's cooking there. What do we have here? All right, this is a report from Ben Webster. The London Times is reporting that Britain's leading scientific institution has been forced to rewrite its guide to climate change and admit that there is greater uncertainty about future temperature increases than it had previously suggested. Nano Magazine editors are reporting in an engineering professor at Florida State's research with carbon nanotubes could lead to developments in hydrogen fuel cells, which could see them becoming widely used in cars industry and the military. Harry Croteau, I think, is at Florida State University, if I remember right, one of the Nobel Prize winners for discovering the buckyball back in 1985. We might get a hold of Harry and see some more information on this. Meanwhile, a research project has found that carbon nanotubes could be up to two times as strong as previously believed. And that report out of the Nano Magazine. And nanotechwire.com is reporting in on quantum advances in information systems. They say researchers converting signals to telecom wavelengths and increasing memory times using optically dense, ultra-cold clouds of rubidium atoms. This report says researchers have made advances in three key elements needed for quantum information systems, including a technique for converting photons carrying quantum data to wavelengths that can be transmitted long distances on optical fiber telecom networks. All right, we'll step out of the newsroom right now and let's get on to our program. You may have seen that news story in the London Times, I'm sorry, the New York Times, beg your pardon, and the Associated Press about Iran seeking to protect its nuclear plants from infection by a computer worm. I didn't really understand this a whole lot, but we happen to be real lucky today because we've got with us Thomas Vergaun, who is with the Homeland Security Agency. I'll get into more of that in just a little bit here. But they're having a big meeting in Boston on November 10th to discuss the federal cybersecurity research priorities, a special session. It'll be pretty interesting, and we've got him on here to tell us all about it. So let's get him on the line right now.
Stand by.
Right at the moment, we have a couple of very interesting guests. One is Karen Krause. She's with Raytheon, and Karen is responsible for, and I really give her an enormous amount of credit when I say responsible. I know she's part of a team, but they're putting on the Homeland Security Conference in Boston the 8th, 9th, and 10th of November, and you've heard us talk about that on this program a couple of times. Anyway, we have Karen with us today, and we have a special guest in Thomas Vergaun. And Thomas, you know, if we could win the war on Homeland Security with titles, our government, you know, we have nothing to worry about, because listen to what Thomas is, okay? Here's his title. Thomas is the Technical Coordinator for the Cybersecurity and Information Assurance Interagency Working Group at the National Coordination Office for the Federal Networking and Information Technology Research and Development Program. And, of course, what he really does is he organizes cybersecurity research and development for that agency and then makes sure the important stuff gets into the president's budget. So welcome to the program, Thomas and Karen.
Thank you for inviting me to this program.
Pleasure to be here.
The reason we want to talk to you, Thomas and Karen, is I understand there's a special session on federal cybersecurity research priorities going to be held in Boston on the 10th, I believe, of November. Correct me if I'm wrong. And where is that going to be held?
That'll be held in Waltham, Massachusetts, at the Westin Hotel.
Okay. And is the public invited, or is this a closed session?
Oh, no, the public is definitely invited, but they do have to be registered as attendees at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference.
Okay, and this will happen after the conference is over with, I understand. In a little bit, I'm going to ask you to give us kind of an update of what's going on with the conference. But right now, I'm going to talk to Thomas. And Thomas, tell us, what is this the special session on federal cybersecurity research going to be about?
Thank you. And thank you again for, you know, giving credit to my long work title. We do work hard on those around here. But, you know, I'd like to really upfront why the special session on federal cybersecurity research priorities at this conference is important, and why conference attendees should really attend. You know, we as a nation are facing a national challenge, right? How do we transform our cyber infrastructure so that critical national interests are protected from catastrophic damage and our society can confidently adopt new technological advances? And unfortunately, as we know, today, the cyber infrastructure that we rely on, internet, telecommunications services, and so on, is vulnerable to exploitation and illicit activities. And, of course, the federal government plays an active role in remedying this situation. And among its different roles in this domain, federal agencies fund and conduct research, both basic and applied, to advance the state of the art in cybersecurity. The R&D programs are coordinated across the agencies through strategic themes, and we can discuss perhaps later in more detail how that coordination happens and who the agencies are. But at the special session, U.S. government representatives will describe the themes and the related priorities. And we're certain that the session will be very informative to those who conduct research for the federal government, as this will give them better understanding of the research needs and directions. And we also hope that the described priorities will motivate research in the private sector. As you know, this is a societal national challenge, and it cannot be solved you know, by one party alone. And it will take a coordinated, concerted effort by many parties to make a difference.
Well, I understand the themes are tailored to trustworthy spaces, moving target, and cyber economics and incentives. And let's take these, you know, one at a time. Now, what are we talking about here with the tailored trustworthy spaces?
Sure. You know, the themes are have been developed and constructed really to focus on deeper underlying causes of the cybersecurity problems that we have today.
Okay.
You know, the themes, you know, are directions to motivate research that will look at not, you know, how do we solve, you know, today or tomorrow's problems and how do we get through today and tomorrow, but really it's looking at what are the underlying causes, right, that are, and then, you know, why we have the issues that we see today. So, for example, you know, one of the underlying causes today is that computers in general are, you know, very homogeneous. Everybody has Windows, more or less, very static. The computers or infrastructure pieces are not really aware of what should be its correct configuration. So as a result, for example, we spend a lot of effort, you know, a lot of resources on trying to determine if whatever is coming into the system, an email, new configuration, you know, new installation, whether whatever we are admitting to the system is clean, whether it's, you know, authentic, or whether it's a virus or some kind of Trojan or something like that. But, you know, instead perhaps we should worry more about developing systems and computers where there is a built-in awareness, if you will, of what is the correct configuration, what are the correct components, the software elements, and so on. And so instead of trying to discern is everything that's coming in authentic or not, is it proper or improper, we could have systems perhaps that will trigger automatically or very quickly without much you know, time and resources to determine whether something that has arrived in the system is considered foreign or whether it's considered as a correct self or a correct part of the configuration. So that's just an example of the thinking behind the themes. And yes, the three themes, as you mentioned them, are tailored trustworthy spaces, moving target, and cyber economics and incentives. And, you know, by no means this is the entire landscape of, you know, what the federal government you know, research enterprise is and what the directions are. But these are the themes that focus on, you know, high priority, high risk, but potentially high payoff results. And so very briefly, I'll start with the first one, tailored trustworthy spaces.
Please, please.
You know, today, one of the issues is that we live in an environment, in the cyber environment, where we're making trust decisions on assertions around us that are not really verified. And we don't really know whether we can trust or not, whether it's authenticity of an email, website, whether you know, we can trust the components along, you know, the communication path or the other parties. So the vision of the tailored trustworthy spaces is to be able to have and develop a kind of environment or subspaces, if you will, in cyberspace that will be able to support different security policies, different security services for different types of interactions. And if I'm surfing the internet and I'm just looking around, want to read something or learn about something, my privacy requirements or security requirements will be probably different from if I'm using internet to interact with a bank or with my medical provider. So the tailored trustworthy spaces is recognition that we need really technologies to be able to tailor the environment we're in the cyberspace to what we want to accomplish and to those types of security elements that are particular to us. And today we have some resemblance of that. People have virtual private networks that they use perhaps in their corporate setting. So that could be an example of, you know, tailoring the space for what you need. But we need to be able to do it dynamically. We need to be able to do it in a way that we can instruct all the components along the communication path or in that space to do what they need to do to configure themselves appropriately, and then be able to receive verified responses from those components that indeed they are doing what they are being told to do. So that's the tailored trustworthy spaces.
Okay.
The second area is something we call moving target.
Mm-hmm.
And here we're focusing on the realization that we have systems today that are static, homogeneous. You know, one vulnerability can be used across a whole range of installations by attackers. And so instead of trying to defend for every possible attack, the moving target is a theme through which we'd like to accomplish and develop architectures where one or more system dimensions can be changed dynamically in a way that's manageable by the defender, but will make that system appear unpredictable to attackers.
Okay. So
today, an attacker can develop one attack and successfully perhaps reuse that attack across, again, large landscape of opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if those systems were deploying or were behaving in an unpredictable way to the attacker, then guess what? Every attack, every installation would look different, and that same attack wouldn't necessarily work for that next computer or that next host. So the moving target is intended to simulate research and technologies in a wide spectrum of opportunities that would make our systems look more dynamic, unpredictable, and less homogeneous and static.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third area that you mentioned, cyber economics,
yeah,
and incentives.
Mm-hmm.
It's a theme that unites directs a lot of thinking that instructs us that really, we're not dealing with just technology and technical problems. We're dealing with user and human and economics-based elements, decision-making. And so we need to support and, create an environment where, for example, deployment of security technology is balanced, where there are, incentives to those who want to deploy or do the right thing and utilize the secure technologies and secure practices, and also where we have incentives that deter or disincentives to deter those who participate in illicit or criminal behavior.
Okay.
So it's an area of activities and research to better understand what are the economics and behavioral issues that can be worked on to improve cybersecurity, where perhaps we could see development and rise of new market forces that will themselves motivate the different actors and players in the right direction, be it insurance markets relevant to cybersecurity, or again a different level of user or developer based incentives for being able to buy or develop secure software, which today if I'm a consumer of services or of software technologies, I don't have really good comparison basis to say this software is more secure than this software.
Mm-hmm.
The cyber economics and incentives area aims at that problem.
So it isn't a matter of just rewarding people who do right in cyberspace, but did I detect there that there could be some sort of economic punishment or penalties or something for people who abuse their activity?
Well, certainly, we and this area aims at enriching those incentives so that if you do the right thing, if you are a developer of software and mm-hmm. you produce higher quality, more secure software, we'd hope that there will be right kind of market, incentives and feedback to those developers to motivate them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Security, has cost associated to it. It takes, you know, it takes effort to develop more secure software. Well, what are the market forces to motivate that, right? And we don't necessarily have the right level of market data that would enable the consumers to make the right choices, and that would perhaps send the signals to the developers, to develop, for example, more secure software.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a free market system as we have right now, that makes a whole lot of sense. But people have been saying that the whole idea of the internet needs to be scrapped and start over from the beginning, and that's the only way we're going to be able to correct the problems that we're having with security. But you don't hold with that. You believe that we can solve the problems with the existing internet the way we have it. Is that right?
Well, I didn't necessarily say that. I think the status quo is certainly not acceptable for many people, and so I think government and industry needs to really look at a variety of options. Market forces are certainly options, but when it comes to, for example, protecting critical infrastructure, just taking an example of basic telephony services, right? Government long time ago stepped into that space and said, government has certain role to play, certain regulatory role to play in assuring sound and secure telephony services. So sure, there are examples of when government regulation has worked and is appropriate, and we need certainly a debate and I'm speculating, of course, but we need to figure out as a nation what are the right roles for the government as well as the industry.
Well, that leads us into my next question. We're doing all these things to protect our own cyber security, but does it look like there's a little monkey business going on around the world? Could you comment on this story from the New York Times and the Associated Press? The Iranian government agency that runs that country's nuclear facilities has reported that its engineers are trying to protect themselves from a sophisticated computer worm that has infected industrial plants across Iran, particularly that one plant at Natez, if that's how it's pronounced, that underground enrichment site that has been a main target of the United States and Israel covert programs, wondering about their developing a nuclear bomb. Well, the problem is I don't understand it, and I didn't understand it from reading the news stories, and I read the news stories several times. How does the worm get in if it isn't connected to the web?
Well, briefly, you can use manual ways to infect the system. People passing along the memory sticks or using CDs. So a CD or memory stick can be infected while you're thinking that you are installing a legitimate version of some software for the needs of your operation there. So that certainly is a vehicle for infection, besides sending emails or being online. And as was reported, the malware is able to spread through a couple of different means. There are issues with the Windows operating system, and then it infects the control system, for the industrial control management and operation. It's certainly a example of the kinds of things that people only talked about in the past. What if industrial control systems are specifically attacked, through cyber means and compromising, those elements as opposed to just your regular sort of business operation. So it's not just a theoretical discussion anymore, an example of something that is out there and does exactly that.
Well, I've been given the cue, we have to take a break, but we'll be back to expand more on that thought right after this. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers, will we meet today? I'm Andy Rooney. You know, if dogs could talk, it would take a whole lot of fun out of owning one.